We're about to rejoin CBS Radio for further word on Apollo 13.
The big problem, of course, there are several problems, but the biggest one is that while the LEM, as Steve Young indicated, has more than ample oxygen supply and does have sufficient power available to provide all of the necessary systems for communication, for guidance, for booster thrust, it is not the kind of vehicle in which reentry can be accomplished. It is built for the 1/6 of Earth's gravity that is experienced on the moon. It is not built for reentering through the Earth's atmosphere. Were it to come back into recognizable Earth atmosphere, it would begin to heat and would very readily turn into a fireball. What makes the big difference, of course, the difference which is on all of the ballistic missiles and, of course, on the spacecraft, is an ablative covering, a surface which will burn away as the thousands of degrees of heat build up as the rushing spacecraft re-enters the dense Earth atmosphere. And so the LEM and the command module, docked nose to nose at this point, will be rushing toward the Earth together. But as the spacecraft approaches Earth's atmosphere, the crewmen will move back into the command module. There they'll be using that battery supply of energy because the power plants, the chemical cryogenic power plants, no longer are sufficient to do the job necessary. So they'll be using the batteries at that point, and they'll also be using an oxygen supply which was put into reserve just moments before the command module was powered down. They'll have sufficient life support necessary for orbiting the Earth to come back to the point where they can make that reentry trajectory for splashdown in the Pacific. Steve Young, you've been talking to many of the people at Houston. You indicated that the key man who knows the makeup of this system is airborne on his way back to Houston. Is there any conjecture whatever as to the cause for this undervolting of the power bus that was the first indication that there was trouble aboard Apollo 13?
Mike, there are as many conjectures as there are people to whom you addressed the question. Over at North American Rockwell about 10 or 15 minutes ago, I watched 10 experts propose 10 theories. They're really not sure. I don't mean to overemphasize the importance of this gentleman from Beechcraft. There is some special information he has, which he can and probably will radio in, but he is a resident expert. The program, of course, is exceedingly complicated. There are hundreds, I think perhaps even thousands of subcontractors, and this is the most knowledgeable man on this now very important subsystem. Incidentally, astronaut Tom Mattingly, the man who missed the mission, we're told is now inside mission control. He arrived there just a few minutes ago, Mike.
Well, there was the man who could not go on the mission because of no antibodies in his blood, which would protect him from German measles. And in point of fact, he had been considered contagious and was being kept away from the other astronauts and from the people in the mission control center. So I guess either at this point they consider his contagion not important or certainly less important than whatever knowledge he can contribute from the 9 months or so of drilling that he did with the other two teammates, astronauts James Lovell and Fred Hayes, and is going to be making some important contributions to the knowledge available on the ground.
I would guess, Mike, that he can lend not only moral support, which would be very important at this time, but also information. After all, Swigert is remaining alone there in the command module, and Swigert is
Steve, we now have the news conference in effect, and here is Chris Kraft of NASA.
Accident with the in the region of the fuel cells and the oxygen tanks. We have not tried too much to reconstruct the what has happened because we were more concerned at the moment for getting the situation under control.
Hello.
As you have seen, we've begun to use the LEM as a device for keeping oxygen in both the command and service command module and the lunar module, and we're using the power system from the lunar module. It appears at the present time that everything is under control and that we have a safe situation at the moment. I think Colonel McDivitt may want to give you some more details on the systems, and Mr. Schoberg could certainly talk about the operations plans that are going on at the present time in the control center.
All right, Chris. The way we have the spacecraft configured right now is
with the CSM powered down completely. Before we powered it down, we were able to isolate the surge tank and the emergency repress tanks in the in the command module. These provide oxygen for reentry, so we have a command module that has oxygen for reentry. It has the reentry batteries, and it has the pyro batteries, and all the systems that are in the command module. Our malfunction apparently occurred in the bay, which includes the hydrogen tanks, the oxygen tanks, and the fuel cells, and was in no way connected with anything with the command module. We should be able to provide power, electrical power, from the LEM for the return voyage to Earth. We should be able to return on the oxygen within the LEM, and we will be using the lithium hydroxide out of both the command module and the lunar module. We can still power the command module from the lunar module at low power levels through the wiring, which is normally used to power the LEM from the command module. So we expect that we'll be using a dual spacecraft mode from now until the time that we get back to Earth. We'll be firing the LEM engine at some time later to accelerate our return voyage, and I think Sig probably comment on that best.
Minimum return to Earth time, this would be a total flight duration, would be about 133 hours. That would result in a landing in the Atlantic. That's one option we have. A second option would be to go to the Mid-Pacific line. That would take about 142 hours, total flight duration. The burns to get you back would be made at about between 77 hours and 79 hours of flight from liftoff. We'd anticipate that the descent propulsion system would be used for either of these maneuvers, and has the capability of either the ones I described.
Ready for questions now? Please wait for the mic. We're going to have to get all this. Where are we? Are you ready? Let's start here and work across. Mark Bloom, then we'll go this way and we'll start with the aisle.
For Jim McDivitt or anyone who wants to ask, how much electrical lifetime do we have in the LEM, and how much oxygen lifetime? How long do we have?
Well, Mark, it depends upon how we use it, obviously. We have four batteries in the descent stage of the LEM with 400 amp hours each. We have two batteries in the ascent stage with 296 amp hours each. If you rough that out quickly, it says we can use power at about 25 amps stay current until we get back. Now, we'll have to arrange the electrical profile so that we can bring up the systems to perform the dock DPS maneuver, and then we'll power down to minimum levels and go on like that. When I left, we had an ample power supply to do the whole mission, but we were still roughing it out and trying to get in a configuration which we knew. Oxygen, we have 48 pounds of oxygen in the LEM descent tanks, which is more than adequate to do the mission. We also have a couple pounds in the LEM ascent tanks. I think I said descent. Descent tank has 48 pounds. The ascent tanks have about a pound or so.
The point is that we have locked up the CSM systems to preserve that spacecraft for reentry, both in terms of power and oxygen. So it is sufficient to support entry.
The command module is completely intact. There's no problem with it at all.
I wonder if we can expand a little more on the possibility of an Atlantic Ocean landing and what the recovery posture is for the Atlantic.
For an Atlantic landing, we would have airplanes with parajumpers on the scene at the time of landing. We're presently surveying that area of the Atlantic. If I remember, it's about 20 or 25 degrees south and about, I think it's about 25 or 30 degrees west longitude. And we're presently surveying the area for ships of opportunity. But we do not have a planned recovery ship in that area, as you know.
Let me follow up on that. Would you say that now it seems a great deal more likely that you'd go for 142 hours and the Pacific, where you have a recovery capability?
I think that's a good possibility, but I'd like to reserve judgment until I see what happens in the next hours. We have some 18 or 19 hours until that burn has to be made, so I think we'd certainly be watching the situation. The Pacific is a lot better from from the standpoint that we have a ship there. It's better from a network standpoint. So it's the preferred place, even though it might take a little longer.
Chris or Jim, can you tell us where the three astronauts are and how they will be living in their return to Earth?
Well, when I left, I think that Jack Swigert was still in the command module and Jim and Fred were in the LEM. And I think that they'll be living between the two spacecraft until they return. Sometime before reentry, of course, the three of them will return to the command module and put the hatch back in and jettison the LEM, jettison the service module.
I'd guess that two of them would sleep in the CSM while the other one stayed awake in the LEM. I would guess that they'll probably go to some kind of ship like that.
Yeah.
How are they going to be getting oxygen and heat in the command module? From the LEM?
We're going to be running one environmental control system or the other. Initially, we'll be running the LEM system. That's what we're running right now. Now, intermittently, we'll run the CSM system to make sure that we keep the atmosphere in the LEM free of carbon dioxide. So we'll be alternating. That's why I say there'll be people in both spacecraft.
All right, let's take them over here, then we'll come back. On this far side. Right there, yes.
Yeah, well, somebody explain to me what you mean by a ship of opportunity in the Atlantic. Is that some merchant ship or Russian sub that happens?
It could be a merchant ship. It could be, I suppose it could be a foreign nation's naval vessel. Any of that kind of thing. Yes, sir.
Right here.
Chris, has this abort situation or altered trajectory ever been run on simulators? In just this way?
Oh, yes. Many times. We run all kinds of abort situations. And if you recall, in Colonel McDivitt's flight, we actually burned the DIPS engine attached to the command and service module. The autopilot in the lunar module is designed to carry out the maneuver under those circumstances. That is, the digital autopilot to damp the oscillations of the combined spacecraft. We are looking even at the possibilities of dropping the service module, but that particular type of maneuver has not been tested in flight, and we'd have to make ourselves certain that we could control the spacecraft under that kind of CG and inertia conditions. So yeah, that's kind of unlikely that we would do that. If we did that, it would give us that much more delta V, you see, because we'd get rid of quite a bit of weight from the CSM.
Jack Strickland?
Chris or Jim, if you've got a situation where the LEM oxygen system can provide like 50-plus hours for two guys, how do you equate that with 146 hours return if you don't have any kind of environmental control of operation in the command module right now?
Normally, we on the lunar surface, we plan on three lunar surface repressurizations. It actually has enough for four. Now, there's about 6.6 pounds of oxygen per repressurization required, and the LEM leak rate is about 0.08 pounds per hour. The metabolic rate is a little bit, and we're using probably 0.2 pounds per hour, so we've got quite a large margin there.
We have been listening to CBS Radio and a conference, a news conference at the Houston Space Center. From what we've been able to gather at this point, there is a possibility of a splashdown in the Atlantic, though no given time has been estimated as yet. And I might add that no planned recovery ship is in that particular area. Aircraft, in the event that the Atlantic is chosen as the splashdown area, aircraft will be notified and they should be able to make the scene with jumpers at the time of splashdown. And when they refer to no planned recovery ship, they mean no United States ship has been assigned to that area. So they'll be looking for and are searching out at the moment any ship of any nation who may be able to do service to the astronauts at splashdown time. The Pacific is the preferred splashdown area, and though it would take longer to make that splashdown mission into the Pacific, it is the preferred one because there are recovery ships and aircraft already assigned to the area. We wish to also point out the fact that there is more than adequate oxygen supply for reentry into the Earth's atmosphere. At the moment, there is no given way to go to the rescue of the astronauts aboard Apollo 13. So apparently the ship now will make one orbit of the moon and then fire the LM rocket in an attempt to send the craft back to Earth. If this plan is followed, splashdown would occur shortly after 11 a.m., that's Central Time, Friday, in the Pacific. And we will certainly keep in touch with CBS Radio for any further developments. This is Franklin Hobbs. This is 830 WCCO Studios, Minneapolis, St. Paul.